This interview was recorded for the International Bomber Command Centre Digital Archive, which owns the copyright for this performance.
That's that one. Okay, we're ready to start. This is Andrew Sadler interviewing Philip Winter at his home in Bromley on the 18th of April 2016 on behalf of the International Bomber Command Digital Archive. Thank you for letting me come, Philip. Can I start with some general questions about your background?
Yes, sure.
Where you told me that you're 99 years of age, and we're here with your wife, who's 95. Where were you born and when?
I was born in Herne Hill in 1917. My mother was in lodgings. Well, that's it, yes. My mother was in lodgings in Herne Hill. I'd never fathomed why. My father was in the trenches, and her father was in a pub in Tunbridge Wells. And my first memories are of the pub in Tunbridge Wells. Why all this happened, I don't know. But my mother went to stay with her father and mother, and my father came over from the war, a bit of a broken man.
But he survived?
He survived, yes. He had a minor wound to his hand, but he survived. But mother told me that if they were out and a car backfired, he'd lie on the pavement straight away.
So he was very badly affected by it?
Shell shot, yes, yes.
And so When you left school, what did you do when you left school?
I was a civil servant. I took the competitive exam for the clerical class, and that year they took 700, and I came 525th, so I was in. And when they asked me what I wanted, I said Air Ministry. And it came back, Board of Education. So I was in the Board of Education Teachers' Pensions Department, which couldn't have been duller. And by the end of 1938, I was fed up. And my brother had taken a short service commission in the RAF. And I thought, well, I'll take a short service commission, but first, I want to know if I can fly. And I joined the RAF VR, stayed in my office, and joined the RAF VR and went down to Gravesend. And in July 39, I did my first solo in a Tugamot. And
what was your reason for joining the RAF rather than going into any of the other forces?
Because I liked flying. I liked the idea of flying. And when I was a little boy of 12, and my brother was 9 or 10, and we were living with my grandfather in the pub in Tunbridge Wells, and one of the post-First World War flying circuses came to Tunbridge Wells, and over the dinner table one day my grandpa pulled out a 10-bob note and said, go and have a fly. So the barmaid took us down to the field in the afternoon while where this flying circus was, and I had my first flight ever. And after that, I just wanted to fly. It was wonderful, looking around, seeing the world from a different angle.
Did your father's experience of the First World War have any part in your decision?
No, none at all, no.
And so when you joined the RAF, how was it that you came to become into Bomber Command?
Well, I joined the RAF VR And of course, at the beginning of the war, we were VRs that were called up straight away. In fact, on the 1st of September, and train went to Cambridge, inhabited the colleges, did IT, initial training wing, and from there, where are we? What was the question?
It was why you were in Bomber Command.
Ah, that's it. Well, when I finished my training, I was asked what I wanted to fly, and I said bombers, because in those days there was a Fairey Battle single-engine bomber, and I was trained on single-engine aircraft. So I thought that'd be all right. While I was on leave, my posting to a Fairey Battle OTU was cancelled, and I was sent to Abingdon. And much to my surprise, Abingdon was twin-engine Whitley's OTU. So I had to convert from single-engine biplanes to twin-engine monoplanes with retractable undercarriages and flaps. Was quite a trial, but I managed it. I had a night flying crash which set me back a bit, but eventually I passed out and was posted to 102 Squadron in Yorkshire at Topcliffe they were. From then on, it was extraordinary. I did three trips as a second pilot. Obviously, you had to do several trips as a second pilot. And on my third trip, I was back in the navigator's seat while he was in the bomber's position in the front, and we were coned in searchlights, and everything in the district opened up on us, and I got a lump of shrapnel which went straight through my left ankle. Anyway, we got through, and we got back, and I was taken to the Norfolk and Norwich Hospital, where they tried to make my foot better, but there was a hole straight through the ankle and out the other side. From there, I went to RAF Hospital at Ely, and they managed to fix it and sent me to a rehabilitation unit at Hoylake in Cheshire, but it wouldn't work. I had so much pain. They said, you'll have to go back to the hospital and we'll fix it so that it doesn't move. So since the age of 24, my left foot has been glued to my left leg I've been lame. Well, so my operational career was very limited, three trips, but I got back to flying 18 months later at Driffield for towing targets for 4 Group Bomber Command, tying out over the North Sea, which was good. I enjoyed that. Then an aircraft called a Martinet. There's a photograph.
So, how long were you actually? How long was it before you actually had to give up operations?
Well,
in your logbook.
Whitley, 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 Whitley. June the 12th, 41 was the night I got wounded, and then I was back on flying a Tiger Moth. December 42. So June 41 to December 42, I was 18 months in hospital and rehabilitation unit, and then went back to towing targets. That's the sum of our lot.
And you were the pilot, obviously.
Yes.
And did you do that then for the remainder of the war?
No, I didn't. When Europe was invaded, we didn't have to. We were moved about, and I was sent to Thamesford to fly Oxfords, which were used for training resistance workers who were being dropped over the other side. A secret RT apparatus. I was just the pilot. Involved a bit of night flying. And after that...
Was this part of the Special Operations Executive?
Yes, yes.
So you knew where, you didn't know who you were carrying, presumably, and...
Didn't know their names or anything about them. I was carrying the instructors and the people, the resistance workers who were being taught to use certain very secret RT apparatus for ground-to-air communication. So I didn't really know anything about it. I was just the pilot. And coupled with that, I was also did long cross-countries training bomb areas to map read, not to a town or a village, but to the corner of a field. I enjoyed that, yes. And then for the last months of the war, I was posted to Lynham Transport Command, operations room. I then held the rank of flying officer. But to begin with, I was a volunteer reserve sergeant pilot. That's a very brief history.
Yes. When you... So what happened when the war ended? How were you demobilised then?
Yes, I was... demobilized. Here we are. December 1945.
And I mean, the crew that you...
And then I was very glad to get back into the civil service. You see, I told you I'd thought of resigning from the civil service and taking a short service commission, but that I wanted to see if I could fly first, and discovering that I could. But I no sooner discovered that I could then the war was on, and I was in my uniform having to do as I was told.
When I came out,
I was very glad that I hadn't left the civil service. I was in the, what was then the Board of Education, which was a non-cabinet post. It was ruled over by a president, and at that time I was lucky because the 1944 Education Act had been passed, secondary education for all, and of course the education department just blew up like a balloon, and I was lucky. I worked hard and went up with it, and I did in my first, well, after, when I was demobbed, I went straight back to my old department, which was teachers' pensions, and I worked hard and got promoted, and then I was moved to the main office, and got a post as a higher executive officer in schools branch, which dealt with local authorities and their schools. And then I was posted to establishments branch, which I hated. And then a curious thing, a man at the V&A Museum had retired and they wanted somebody to fill his shoes. So I applied for that. I thought this would be very interesting. So I applied and I succeeded in the competition and became deputy museum superintendent. After about a year, the superintendent moved on and there was a competition for his job, but of course I was sitting pretty. So I became the museum superintendent at the V&A with a flat in the museum, and I brought up my family there.
Oh, marvellous.
And well, about 1945, the education department took over responsibility for the staff in all the national museums, and they wanted somebody who knew about staff in museums, which I did after 13 years, to take charge of it. So I finished up as a senior principal, and retired at 58.
Mm. What age did you leave school and join the civil service?
Seventeen.
When you went out on your three missions and you were injured, were any of the other crew injured? Or?
No. But I met the man who was skipper that night, a chap called Oscar Rees. He'd done two Bomber Command tours, a tour on Pathfinders, and he got a DSO for bringing back an aircraft with everybody dead or wounded, except him. And he got a DSC as well, and a Pathfinder badge. I met him in the ops room at Lynham. Wonderful chap called Oscar Rees. And I haven't been able to get in touch with him. Amazing.
Mm. Excellent. Let me just